Welcome to Mountains Are For Moving, where ordinary people are doing extraordinary things. I'm Jacqueline Snyder, psychotherapist and social activist.
And I'm Susan Ramirez, founder and president of the nonprofit Austin Angels. We believe that each of us has the capacity to overcome even the most daunting of obstacles. Sometimes we just need a little inspiration. And that's what this podcast is all about. It's about hearing real stories from real people. It's about looking inside ourselves and standing up to the obstacles within us. We're happy that you're here.
Hi everyone, this is Jacqueline, and I'm so sad to say that again, I'm flying solo without Susan, but it's actually for a really good reason. Susan is getting prepared for the Dare to Dream luncheon that we mentioned two episodes ago, and I really encourage you to check that out on the Austin Angels website. It is going to be an amazingly epic event with star speakers like Rachel Hollis and Jen Hatmaker and more and more and more. So please make sure to check that out because you can actually live stream it and be a part of it. So we will have Susan after this chaos. But for today, I have joining me one very special woman from our community. Her name is Jackie Hooks. And I was introduced to Jackie through our church. And actually really specifically through a nonprofit that she was running called Pruning Hooks. And I don't even know how this came about, but for some reason you asked me to share my story.
Well, and what I would always do when we were having people share their stories is I would just pray and see who I felt like the Lord wanted me to ask. And it was you, and that felt extraordinarily awkward because I'm like, I know you a little.
Right.
Like, that's really it. I know you a smidge, and I'm about to say, hey, would you share your story one night at this event that I put on? So, yeah, it is that big and that small.
It was a really powerful night for me. I was going through a lot of stuff at that time, transition and just owning parts of my story that I hadn't really ever shared. And so that was a really big moment for me. And I definitely think God orchestrated that. And so speaking of story, Jackie has an amazing, amazing story. And, I just think you all are just going to be so, not to be cliche, but blessed by this time hearing her story and what God can do. And even if you're not a Christian, I just want you to hear that there is power in your story and finding the courage to have your voice to share that story and trusting where God will lead you with your story. So since this is her jam, I mean, Jackie is a speaker, she's an author. I'm really just going to give her the reins and let her share her story because I don't really know that she needs a whole lot of prompting from me because she's so good at this. So we're just going to let her share. And I'm really excited to hear all your feedback from it. So,
oh my goodness. Thank you so much. Okay. So I believe that our stories are powerful, mainly because I'm just an ordinary person. I'm just an ordinary person with four kids and a husband, and I've been a teacher, I've been a stay-at-home mom, I've run a nonprofit, but all the while I'm still in the trenches with laundry and with dishes and all the things. And so would my story still be powerful in knowing that I'm worthy of a story that is powerful and that we all are was something very enormous to me, and that only came about really through counseling. I had an awesome counselor who I love to pieces, and she completely instilled in me that that my story was extraordinary, no matter how ordinary I felt like it was. So my story is crazy. It really, really is. And I'm just going to start at the beginning because that's really the only place to start. So I grew up a very typical poor kid in Texas. We lived in government-subsidized apartments. And the kids who lived downstairs from us, when they were in fourth grade and first grade, their parents gave them up to a children's home because they couldn't afford to keep them. We always had crimes happening where we lived. My friend Casey was home alone. She was probably in second grade and her house was broken into. Different things like that were constantly happening. Lots of unhealthy people in our life. And my mom was recently divorced and just trying to make ends meet and doing the best she could while she pretty well navigated a nervous breakdown of some sorts. And that doesn't mean that she was crazy or anything. She was just having a really hard time and happened to have two daughters at the same time. So we did what we always did, which meant that we played in our parking lot a lot unsupervised. This was about 1981. This was 1981. And so we would always go outside and play and nobody would be out there. And sometimes there would be groups of kids and sometimes there would just be me and my sister and you would play in the parking lot. So one day we were playing in the parking lot and all of a sudden this young, good-looking guy in Jordache jeans came up out of nowhere, it seemed like, and he asked my sister and I, he said, "Hey, I am catching bunnies in the woods. Would you like to come catch bunnies?" And we had been, you know, told about stranger danger. This was in the 80s when you were warned a million times over about taking candy from strangers or vans with people in them and all those things. But no one had ever said that this young, handsome guy was going to walk up and ask us if we wanted to catch bunnies. That didn't fit the bill for stranger danger. Right. And so instantly we said yes. Mm. And the walk from our parking lot all the way to where the woods were was filled with laughter and conversation. And what were we going to name the bunnies? And would our mom freak out? And how was this all going to go down? And there was never a moment of fear. There was a moment of, there was never a moment of, are we doing the wrong thing? Is this man going to do something? Never. It was like being abducted by a camp counselor. And so we walked all the way to the woods and we walked back into the woods. And instantly when I saw two blankets laying on the ground, and I'm a crier, so I may cry. I knew that something horrible was about to happen. And every alarm inside my six-year-old body went off. My sister was seven and I was six. And he told us, you have to catch the bunnies by taking your shirts off. And I remember begging him and begging him and begging him and begging him that we could just catch the bunnies with our shoes. Would you just let us catch the bunnies with our shoes? Mm-hmm. And so by the grace of God, I think I pretty much just went into shock and everything went black. Mm-hmm. So when I come to or whatever, he is yelling at me and screaming at me in my face, and I can't see my sister right off the bat, and I hear a voice inside my head and inside my heart that said, "Run or die." Mm-hmm. And at that moment, everything went in slow motion, and I outran a man that day because he didn't just let me run; he chased me.
Oh, really?
So I ran into the parking lot and there happened to be this guy who was underneath his car, fixing his car that day. And he would go back into the woods and get my sister. And people always ask the question, how is your sister? My sister's fine. We both went home that day with this man who would walk us home, who would call the cops. They would come and do composite sketches and ask us a million uncomfortable questions. Mm-hmm. And before this man would leave, whoever he was, I have no idea who he was, he would get the cops and my mom and my sister and I and pray that someday our story would have value. Aww. And that someday we would be okay. And then he left and we went to bed that night and we never talked about it again. And so as poor kids and typical Southern women, you don't talk about the things that make you uncomfortable and you're too poor to go to counseling. And so it is just this thing that happened, but it didn't affect you.
It wasn't supposed to.
Right. It wasn't supposed to. You were just not smart enough to realize that you weren't supposed to follow this man into the woods. And so I lived out a typical existence of what women and girls act like often when they are abused or abducted. I spent a huge portion of my life extremely promiscuous. I started having sex when I was 13 years old. And I often joke that when I went to college, I think I had sex with everyone. And so that was just the way that I lived out my life. I always had two lives going on. I always had my life where I was doing well in school and partying in secret, or my life where I was vice president of my sorority and had a whole other life going on too. Like, I always would divide my life in between, I think, who I felt like I was and who I needed to show other people that I was. And so I get married to the same man. My husband's name is Corey. We got married in 1999, and he's super broken and I'm super broken, and we get married and we have a super broken marriage. And somewhere at about 2005, when him and I were about to get divorced, Jesus stepped into our life in an unbelievable way. And for us, we have never been the same. And it's been this journey of what I thought would be a journey to just get good. That's what I figured would happen, was that I would just get good. And maybe someday I would wear pantyhose a lot and sit on lots of committees and maybe join lots of organizations, and I would just get good. But of course, I believe that Jesus is way bigger than all of that crap anyways. And so what it really has been for me, and this is just, you know, this might sound big and small all at the same time, but for me, it has been a journey back into my story. If you'd asked me in 2005 when we became Christ followers who was in the woods with me, I would have told you that it was pure evil in the woods, and that portion of my story belonged to pure evil, pure bad. It was just bad, and it was horrible. I possibly would never have talked to you about it or told you that it happened, but if you had gotten inside my head and asked me that question, I would have said that it was pure evil. If you had asked me in 2012, whose story it was, I would have told you that it was my story, that I saved myself, that my instincts saved me, that I have always been a survivor. My home life was not a good home life anyways. And so it was hard enough as it was, and I'm a survivor and I'm strong and I can pull myself up and take care of myself. But if you ask me today in 2017, after heap tons of counseling and possibly getting into my 40s, which seems to make you just all better, I would tell you that this is God's story in my life. I would have told you years ago that that God was going back for the little girl in the woods. And I have since realized that that's just a lie. So one of my earliest memories is, and this is why I believe that was a lie, that I believed for a long time that he was going back to save the little girl in the woods. When I was about 5 years old, before all the nightmares started taking place of all the bad things that happened in my life and all the pieces of my story, I had my favorite sweater in the entire universe ever, and it was white, and it had different colored hearts on it, and they made a rainbow up at the top. It may have had some poofy sleeves, and I loved this sweater. And I was standing outside in my grandparents' front lawn, and the high school cheerleaders were walking home from school, and they stopped and said, "Oh my gosh, she's so cute. She's so cute. You're so cute." I had bleached blonde hair at the time. It was before I started dyeing my hair red. And I remember standing there and having that feeling of, yes, I am cute. Aww. And I'm smart, and I'm funny, and I'm beautiful, and I'm all these things. And I used to love to stand out on my grandparents' front lawn and feel just the sun in my face and be outside and have cartwheel races and do all the things that you do when you're 5 years old and life is good. And I've since come to realize that this story, and it's the same story for all of us, is that Jesus is going back for the little girl in the rainbow sweater. He is going back for the us that he created. He is going all the way back past all the bad to who he created you to be, to who you were before all the bullshit and all the chunks of horribleness that took place in your life. And that is why there's power in a story. Because for me, telling my story and saying it out loud, even telling it to myself, saying this happened and it had an effect on me and it shattered me in a way that I cannot personally repair without help. In telling my story to other women, in telling my story to men, in telling my story of brokenness to my mom and saying I'm not okay and I need help and I may be in my 30s at the time, but I need help. In telling this story and telling it over and over again and seeing the value and seeing the lessons and seeing the bigness in it, then all of a sudden you start realizing that the beginning you thought that began the trajectory of your life was not at all. Like the beginning was this beautiful creation that was smart and funny and knew her worth and knew that she had mountains to move and was totally willing to move them. That is who God wants us to be. And so for me, in the power of telling this story over and over and over again is simply that I was able to see myself. And so it became somewhat of an obsession for me to hear people's stories. I think that's my favorite thing in the whole entire world is that all of us ordinary girls and ordinary guys have extraordinary stories. And when we hear ourselves tell them, we can see pieces of them that we never saw before and see fingerprints of God or fingerprints of goodness or fingerprints of hope. We can start to see themes playing in and out of our life where we're like, of course, I always was a writer. I always was funny. Those are things that are part of me and they are meant to do great things. So I don't know that my story, I do know that my story is not finished. I think that there is this enormous power in story and storytelling, and it is just, that's what I do.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Jackie, for sharing all of that. I didn't know all of your story. Thank you. That really means a lot. And so you're just talking now about, you know, your passion for story. So tell us a little bit about Pruning Hooks and what that was about.
So when I was 37 years old, I surprisingly found out I was pregnant with my fourth child. So I have four kids. I have Jacob is 13, Jude is 12, Grace is 10. And the year that she was going to kindergarten and going to be off into free school, I found out I was pregnant. And I was, I would love to say that I was like, oh my gosh, this is not what I had planned, but isn't it a blessing? I was possibly like the devastated woman that people would say, how are you doing? And like, I can't lie. So I'd be like, I'm hanging on by a thread.
Right.
And that lasted the whole pregnancy. There was never a moment where I got on board. I just was constantly having to be like, okay, this is the path that I'm on. Yeah. And so in that kind of deconstruction of what I thought the next at least year of my life was going to look like, I had to really wonder, what am I supposed to do? So I went, this is a random story, but I felt like I was supposed to go tour this small private school, in the middle of the Third Ward of Houston, and it's called Generation One Academy. And I went there and I was going to tutor possibly on occasion. And I toured the school and I was the super pregnant sobbing woman in the middle of a tour. Like everybody else was just like happily on the tour. And I was like crying my eyes out and like holding onto walls to make it, and I get home and I'm just like, yep, I'm going to tutor there on occasion when I have enough time, maybe even once a month. Let's just see all I have to offer the world. And I really felt like that I was supposed to feed a school. And I was like, we're the brokest we've ever been. I'm about to have my fourth kid. Here are all the pieces of my story. And you're telling me that in the middle of my ordinary life, I'm supposed to do something extraordinary that I have no resources for. So through all this and through about 400 pounds of prayer, we started, we being me and a gal who had become my best friend, her name is Jody, and she was just crazy enough to say, if you're going to feed a school, I'm in. And I barely knew her. So we would get teams of women that were neighborhood teams or Bible studies, or they worked together or whatever to take a day a month to pack free healthy sack lunches for this little school tucked in the middle of the Third Ward, because wow. these were kids that were on free and reduced lunches. So we were meeting a need because the school could not pay for their lunches. And so how do wow. you ask kids to all of a sudden incur this cost that they can't incur? So we would bring, like, and they, all the sacks had their names on them and so on and so forth. We had this whole system. So we fed a school 5 days a week, year round, for 4 years.
What?
I know, that's crazy. So that's where Pruning Hooks began. And it began out of this, like, we're going to feed a school. But what we noticed instantly was that, yes, children that were hungry were being fed. And that was super important. But women whose lives were not necessarily doing anything, not having any impact, not seeing anyone who was marginalized, not seeing the starving children that lived right outside their suburban neighborhoods, were absolutely changed.
Oh, wow.
And so they all of a sudden have this hand in that, like, God wants to provide for people. Oh, what if you're the provision? Wow. God wants to take care of children. Oh, what if it's your hands? And so this little step into packing sack lunches for children that they've never met. And I don't know how many parents are listening to this, but I hate packing lunches for my children. Hate it. Yes. But packing lunches for other kids, absolute joy. So we started realizing that there were these ordinary women who could step into this extraordinary life. And so in it just began with doing lunches. And on top of that, once a month, we would ask an ordinary woman to share her story. And always she would see that it was extraordinary. Always.
Wow.
And so that's where it began. It began in 2012. That we would once a month have somebody share their story. And always in the sharing of it, these ordinary women, and I say that in air quotes, ordinary women would see that their story was extraordinary. And that's big for people to yes. all of a sudden catch on that, like, mm-hmm. I have a place in this world and I can yes. do things of impact, and things of impact have been done to me, mm-hmm. and I am more than just this person that's going to live for a while and try to be halfway decent.
Right.
So that is where it all began. It was set out to feed kids, and that's all we were going to do, and ended up realizing almost instantly, the first time we ever got a group of women together and helped them pack lunches, we were like, this is having more of an effect on them mm-hmm. than it is on these kids. These kids are fed, and that's good, and they're excited, and they're overjoyed and wonderful. But these women needed to know that their lives could be extraordinary. So,
oh, wow. I love that. Well, that's yes. so funny, because you know our podcast slogan, right, is ordinary people doing extraordinary
things. No, I don't. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
That was our mission statement for Pruning Hooks, yes. was that we were a group of ordinary women following Jesus, allowing him to make our lives extraordinary.
I love it.
Yeah, so that's crazy.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's killing me that Susan isn't here, because I feel like there's – I really see a – parallel in your stories of, like, you know, you kind of were on your way doing one thing and God just kind of like knocked you off and yes. was just like, hey, you know, yes. actually you're going to do this other thing. And you both felt like, I can't do this, you know, which I feel like is every story in the Bible, right?
Right.
Like, I yes. can't do this. And then suddenly it's like, oh no, you can, because I'm going to wrap around you what you need to happen. Yeah. So that's so awesome.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. It's been a crazy journey. And so we actually, we moved here. We left Katy, Texas, and we moved to Austin, in 2016. And then we moved to Buda in 2017. So we feel like we lived in Arlington for a long time. We feel like we've done a tour of the state of Texas. and just really, getting to a place where you realize that, like, you have these plans for your life, mm-hmm. and sometimes there are other plans, and they are huge and good and big, and it's all part of this overarching story that is not just always going to be about you. Mm-hmm. There was a time in my life where somebody asked a question. They it was a gal leading a Bible study, and she said, what gets in the way of your prayers? And I was with a whole group of women, and one of them, they all gave very fake answers to that question. Mm. And it was so annoying. I had to roll my eyes a whole bunch, but only inside my head. I did not want them to know that I was seriously sitting there judging them.
This is why I love Jackie. Yes. She tells it like it is. What you see is what you get with Jackie.
That's all I have to offer. So they were all answering like, oh, sometimes when I pray, I find myself praying for the freedom of religion for other countries. And sometimes I just pray for education for children. And like, okay, so maybe that's true, but I'm thinking it's not. And so it came to me and I said, I feel awkward answering this way, but the truth is what gets in the way of my prayer life is that I pray for my house to look like a Pottery Barn catalog, or I pray that my husband would just get a promotion, or I pray that I would lose like 20 pounds all of a sudden any way possible, even if it's a tapeworm. And I pray that I would get a bigger house someday and have a swimming pool. Like I pray for these things that are actually not important. And it was in like the leveling of, I am just this ordinary girl that is ordinarily selfish. I'm not anything amazing in any other way. I'm just like you. I'm just like her. I'm just like the next girl. We all have these same hopes and dreams that maybe have nothing to do with our true story. And by hopes and dreams, I use that term loosely, like these wants that we think are needs. How about that? We have these wants that we think are needs that maybe have nothing to do with our true story. Our true story is always going to be so much bigger than having a really great couch. Our true story is going to always be so much bigger than making the committee. Our true story is always going to be so much bigger than these little pieces that we find are so important. And so, I think that has been the truth of my story for the past 40, almost 42 years, is that I have small little hopes and dreams for myself, and God has big plans.
And so tell us what has happened now with Pruning Hooks. Tell us where you're at now.
So we, it was up and thriving and amazing. And Katie, our board was incredible. Jody and I loved what we did. It was a lot, but we loved it. And it was good. And so I moved to Austin and you have these little like, so this is probably coming to an end, but you hold on for dear life because this was the good thing that we did. We had a great spring. We moved Pruning Hooks out here to Austin. We had a great spring. We did some incredible fundraisers. We were able to support a lot of ministries that are already here in Austin that are doing incredible things. We heard incredible stories. We heard Jacqueline's story. We heard a couple's story. We'd never done that before.
I was there for that.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Amazing.
It was amazing to hear your, like,
I want to get them on the podcast.
Yeah, you should. That was really good. Yeah. And so we did all these amazing things. So then therefore, because it is good and it's thriving and there's interest and all these things, then we're going to keep doing it. We're just going to keep going in the same direction forever. I heard a girl friend of mine say, gosh, this is probably about 12 to 15 years ago. She said, if in 10 years I am still talking about what I did yesterday for God and still looking back and looking back on, remember what we did? And 10 years have passed and I have nothing new. Then I wonder if I'm still following him.
Wow.
And she said this, and I thought, well, I'll tuck that in my pocket.
Yeah, that's good.
So this summer, we always take a break in the summer from Pruning Hooks because I have four kids and because other people have one or two or seven. And we all need to breathe and swim and get as tan as possible because that's another obsession of mine.
Yes.
Yes, I really like to have a good glow about me.
All the time.
All the time. All the time. It doesn't matter if it's November. In this break, you start to hear the whispers of God saying, the end.
Oh, man.
The end.
Yeah.
And you're like, no. This is what I do. This is what I do. And he kept saying it over and over and over and over again. The end. Like, close the chapter. Yeah. It's done. And so we did. And there has been nothing yet that has filled that space. Mm. So I'm sitting in that place, I think, yes. that a lot of us find ourselves where we are finished with something that was enormous to us. Maybe you moved. Maybe your husband lost his job. Maybe your kids went off to college. It doesn't matter. You're in a transition in your life. Mm-hmm. Maybe your girlfriend leaves you, whatever that looks like. And something comes to an end. Mm-hmm. And nothing fills its space quite yet.
Yes.
And so you have these wise people in your life that say things like, things are going to be quiet for a while. No. What? There's nothing yet that has, like, I'm in a season right now where God has closed pretty much every door, that I thought would stay open. Mm-hmm. Ending Pruning Hooks was heart-wrenching for me. And sad, and at the same time, absolutely filled with peace. Mm. And so I'm sitting in these moments of waking up every day, and my three big kids go to school. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I take Joshua to a little preschool program. And where I used to come home and have 9 million people to call and events to schedule and all this, that, and the other, it is me and my dog named Sugar, who is very disobedient. And a lot of quiet and a lot of space to know that my story is not over. Mm. I just don't know what the next chapter is. And it's hard. It's harder than I thought it was going to be. And I know that, like, the grass is always greener, and there's people that are so in a busy season right now that are running for their lives to get things done that would be like, I would give anything.
Space.
No. Like, this quiet and this space and this uncertainty is challenging. It's hard. It's disappointing.
It's disorienting.
It's disorienting. Too, right? Yes. Yeah. That is the big thing of who am I? Right. You just took everything that I thought was going to be who I was. And you took everything that I was doing and you stopped it. Mm-hmm. And I have to believe that there's more to this story. But I don't know what it is yet. And it is so disconcerting. I feel like I'm in the middle of a midlife crisis, which everybody tells you, like, you'll hit your 40s and you'll have a midlife crisis. And I'm like, ha ha ha, that would never happen to me. I'm so sure of who I am. And here I am at 41 years old thinking like, who am I? Mm-hmm. But what I do know, and I will definitely, share this with you guys. What I do know is that I'm the little girl in the rainbow sweater. Mm. I am smart and I am beautiful and I am funny, and there are mountains that I am supposed to move even if I do it with a teaspoonful. Mm-hmm. There is hope. There is sunlight on my face because, you know, I'm getting tan. And I know who I am. Mm. I'm just not certain of what I'm supposed to do next.
Oh. Thank you so much for sharing, like, just this. You're in a really vulnerable spot right now. And I can really relate. That's how I felt after grad school, honestly. When I was going to school to become a therapist, for the first time in my life, I felt like, these are my people. This is my lane. I was thriving. I knew who I was. Like, everything just made sense, even though it was really hard. Like, it was really, really hard in a lot of ways. And, you know, I knew graduation was coming. But when it came, yeah, I had that. And I was also pregnant, and just, you know, so, like, a lot of stuff changed real quick. And it was really disorienting for me and really scary. And so I know this feeling right now, and people call it, you know, sometimes you hear people call it the desert, or, like, you know, if it's a spiritual journey, it could be like this dark night of the soul or whatever, where you're just kind of like, all right, here I am. But what I'm really hearing from your story, and I hope that our listeners are hearing too, is this willingness to just sit in who you are, and that being enough. Not waiting for something else to produce to prove your worth. And that doesn't mean that you don't still want to have something else to do. Because I know that's so exciting, especially you feel that wind at your back. And you've got, like, God just, you know, you just feel like you're just, boom, making things happen. That's so exciting. But to be able to sit in that space for now and say, okay, like, you didn't forget me then. You haven't forgotten me now. We're here. We're in this space. Something's coming. I don't know what. But we know that
he's preparing you in this moment for something.
Something.
Right.
And know that I am sometimes holding on to a chair to make myself stay in that space. Like, it is, it's not easy.
No.
And especially for those of us that are doers, it feels like a nightmare. But there's nothing I can do about it.
So what are you doing to help you cope with this time? Like, what practical things are you actually doing?
What I've always found for myself is just, I'm just being honest and just sharing this place that I am with other people, because I cannot take these journeys by myself. Mm-hmm. I am a person that always needs community and always needs a tribe. And so I have to tell people, hey, this is where I'm sitting. And please, please, if you're a praying person, pray for me, because I don't know what to do next. Mm-hmm. And then also trying to know that that my voice and my story and my picture of the world and all that still has a place, mm-hmm. even if I don't have 90 credentials below my name. Mm-hmm. So I can still write and I can still go speak to groups without saying I'm the president and founder of Pruning Hooks. I still can. Right. And that is hard to know that I still have that voice and that place and that encouragement to offer people, mm-hmm. and not have a, so this is what I do, mm-hmm. to say, mm-hmm. well, this is what I do. I yes. speak to people and I encourage them and I write. Yes. And that transition is uncomfortable, but trying to still believe that that it's real, mm. and that my voice is real and that my stories that I tell, yes. are real.
Yes.
So
yes,
all and those things.
This culture that we live in, right? Who just, we love to have those credentials. We love to have, yes. those titles, and it's really easy to get sucked into all of that. And so, I think that you have a really powerful story to tell for people who are, I mean, in that position right now. Like, I mean, I feel like for me, I kind of got stripped away because I was, you know, doing my practice and I had everything. And then it was like, oh, I'm just a stay-at-home mom, which, let me tell you, I know now is not just anything.
Right.
It grew me so much. But now I'm getting back into that business world, right? And so hearing your story is such a reminder for me to not, you know, get seduced by that again, you know, by those titles and here's what I've done and here are the letters I have behind my name. And, you know, cause it could get taken away. Like, at any minute, yes. I could have a new season. And, you know, it's just remembering that my worth has to come from God. It cannot come from what I'm doing or what I've done or accomplished. So I think, you know, anyone who's listening to this, who's kind of in that space right now, we don't want to like burst your bubble. Like, that's great. You know, you're rocking it. But, you know, just, it might be wise to take some moments to make sure that you're not getting all of that energy and that excitement because of other people's validation.
Right.
Because of what you're doing, but because you truly are in your lane doing what God made you to do. There's a difference, I think.
There's a huge difference. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, Jacqueline. There's a huge difference.
And you mentioned that you write, yes. and so you have a book. So I tell do. Us about your book.
Okay, so in 2013, I met a gal who was much younger than me. She was possibly like close to 20 years younger than me. She was wonderful. And she said to me, I feel like you have a story inside of you that you're afraid to share. And I'd recently had a woman tell me to write what scares you, because that's what people need to read.
Wow.
Because those are the things that make us feel like we're alone. That's but like, so those good. Are the things that other people need to hear.
Yes.
And so these two things took place pretty close together. And I had in a little workshop, I don't even know what type of workshop it was, but they'd given us 10 minutes to write the thing that we'd never told anybody. And so I wrote basically page one of my book.
I'm like sweating.
Yes, it was like horrible. It was horrible. And then the lady, and I'm like, I possibly should go find her someday and be like, that was uncool. So we do it. And then she's like, all right, turn to the person next to you who I didn't know
oh my gosh.
And read what you wrote. And
oh
I was like, Like, I'm a pretty vulnerable person, but, like, that's too much. And wow. So I think I, like, did not get a word out because I'm like, I can't share this with you. Mm-hmm. But from that, I wrote the story of my journey, and the book is called Bear. Mm-hmm. And it is, yes, it is just my crazy vulnerable journey. And it takes place, it starts at the woods. Mm-hmm. When my sister and I were walking to the woods. So it starts there. It ends about, it ends about 4 or 5 years ago. So there's been life lived since then. It ends after we had started pruning hooks. Mm-hmm. But it's just this story of, it's my story. And it's a story of an ordinary girl who had some horrible life events. Mm-hmm. And finding out that God is good. Mm-hmm. How, and, you know, it's the big life question. Like, why do bad things happen to good people?
Yes.
And I am flipping funny, and I'm a wonderful, delightful person, and some really bad crap happened to me. And so I think it is just the story of when our ordinary lives get transformed. And literally, I want to say this again. I really thought that when Jesus stepped into our life and we started going to church, I really thought it was just about getting good. Mm. Like, I'm just going to clean up and maybe I'm going to quit smoking and I'm going to quit doing drugs and I'm going to be a better mom. Mm. And I'm going to wear nicer clothes to church. And I'm like, all these things, like, I'm going to get good. Mm-hmm. I'd never cleaned up my foul mouth. So maybe that was the tip of the iceberg for me. And it had nothing to do with that. There were things that I definitely needed changed in my life because I was making poor, destructive choices. However, it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with this ordinary girl finding out that, like, there's a whole story that God's been waiting to kick off and start. And you have seen glimpses of it from my history teacher, Miss Lee, in seventh grade, who I will never forget. Like, when a sweet little old lady teacher speaks powerfully into a bad girl's life and tells my history class one day, keep an eye on Jackie because she is going to do amazing things someday.
Oh, God,
like, when you start to look back at your life and see that, like, there was this whole other story trying to get started all along. And then it has nothing to do with getting good because I'm going to trip up and fail and I hate pantyhose. And who wants to wear naturalizer flats? Nobody does. And so I think that's what the book is about, is realizing that there is this God that is good in spite of all the crap.
Yes. Oh, thank you. This is so good. I feel like I need to check the time because I could just talk to you forever. We're doing okay. So if people want to book you for speaking, which I highly recommend because this is amazing. If you could just see her in person, you'd love her even more. Or get access to her book or whatever. It's JackieHooks.com, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I did put that as a link to our podcast on our podcast page today on Mountains Are For Moving.
You can also find me on Facebook. I always say it's me fancy. So there's a picture of me. It's a professional picture and I have on, I don't even know what I have on. But you're like, oh, that's a professional picture. That might not be what I look like on, any normal day.
I feel like it does capture like something about like your energy.
One of the things that I promised myself when I got new pictures taken, this year is that I would wear the amount of makeup that I typically wear.
Mm.
So I haven't changed the pictures on my website yet and I need to, but, I wanted to look like what I look like so that if you hired me to speak that you wouldn't be like, needs to possibly go back and put on some blush. So you can find me on Facebook, Jackie Hooks, or go to JackieHooks.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Jacqueline what I may do today, and maybe will encourage me to do it. I don't know. We'll see. Always the insecure girl going to a middle school dance over here. But I'd like create a basic basically a way that you can order my book. Mm-hmm. So one of the questions that you might be asking yourself today is, I feel like I'm supposed to write a book, and what do I do with that? Yes. Write it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm supposed to teach a class. What do I do with that? Teach it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm supposed to become a yoga instructor. What do I do with that? Become a yoga instructor. I feel like I'm supposed to go back to work. Go back to work. Right. Like, do the things.
Yeah.
I heard an interview on NPR a million years ago. And they were interviewing this guy that was 85 years old. I cannot remember why they were interviewing him. I'm sure it was something amazing. And they said, is there anything that you want to leave our listeners with? And so maybe I'll leave y'all with this today.
Yes, please.
And he said, well, I'm 85 years old. And what I have learned is one thing. When you are at the end of your life, you are not going to wish that you spent more time at the job you hated. Mm. You're not going to wish that you made more money. You're not going to wish that you spent more time with the people who never treated you well in the first place. Mm. You are going to wish that you spent more time doing what you loved, mm-hmm. loving on your family, mm-hmm. and sitting outside and drinking tea.
Oh,
so I say all that, whatever it is that that is supposed to be part of your story, that you can feel it in your soul when you wake up in the morning, go do it right now.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. Gosh, it's like, and that's what this podcast is all about. It's just about people realizing their dreams and moving their mountains, the things that are in their, and are maybe in the way in their life. They are keeping them from their dreams. And thank you. This is exactly what I think we all needed to hear today.
Oh, fantastic.
And yeah, for me especially too, I know we've had a lot of talk in our community about, you know, the best yes, right? Like, mm-hmm. we get tempted to say yes to a lot of things. But I feel like what you're also saying is you're giving us all permission to do the thing that we love, whether or not it's what other people think we should do or what impresses other people or what makes the most money or whatever. Do the thing that gives you life.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
You're
welcome. This has been so wonderful. We're going to have you back. I know it. So thank you all so much again for listening today. Please make sure to check out JackieHooks.com or find her on Facebook. And we will have another episode out to you in a couple weeks. But if you are wanting some mountain moving type energy before then, definitely check out the Dare to Dream luncheon. It's just going to be unbelievable. And I'm sure we're going to have lots to say about it after the fact. So tune in next time. And again, if you are liking this podcast, it would really mean a lot to us if you could leave us a review on iTunes. And we also want to thank again Greg Myers for the amazing composing that he did for our music theme for this podcast. All right, y'all, have a great day.